Welcome, welcome to one and all, to the folks that are with us online in Web Yeshiva, and to the both the regulars and the irregulars here around the table. We have some guests that have joined us for what was advertised as a special pre-Rosh Hashanah shiur. So we have some people that have decided to sit in, and maybe they'll get inspired and come back next week when we go back to our regular study. But tonight, normally this is a shiur in Masechet Kiddushin. But tonight we're doing something from Masechet Kiddushin. What? It happens that only men come, although we have some women that join us online, but you're welcome to join us during the week. We're ecumenical. But in the meantime, we raise our glass,
l'chaim. That sounds great.
To the new year. Shana Tova, mit Mazel and Glick and Gesund and all the good things to everybody. Lanu, l'chol Yisrael, l'chol
ha'olam. Amen. When my aunt passed away, the funeral director came up to my uncle. That's the meeting. I mean, that's the right.
Vespers, yeah. Myra. So here we go. Here we go. Here we go. It's a Gemara that we'll get to yet. We're not there yet. It's a Gemara on Daf Memchet. Right now we're on Mem Vav. So we're going to come back up to it, but we're jumping ahead a little bit to deal with some inyone de yoma, as they say, things related to the spirit of the day. It's the Gemara, it's a Mishnah here on the top of the page on the Xerox that you have and what you see on the screen. Or those of you that brought Gemaras, you can look inside if you want. The Mishnah says, a man says to a woman, Hitkadshi li bekos ze shel yayin, v'nimtza shel dvash. You know, our universal custom is to get married with a ring. A plain gold band. Maybe some of you are wearing such a thing. Exhibit A, Exhibit B. But really, any item that has financial value, what's called shove pruta, a minimum financial value, could be used in order to initiate the kiddushin. So if a man says, here, get married to me, here's a cup of wine. And it turns out, instead of a cup of wine, it's a cup of honey. Shel dvash, v'nimtza shel yayin, or he says, here, get married with this cup of honey. You know, if you go into the stores now, a cup of honey costs a lot of money. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah. B'dinar zeh shel kesef, v'nimtza shel zahav, with this gold coin, with this silver coin, and it turns out that it's a gold coin. Shel zahav, v'nimtza shel kesef, and or vice versa, right? You understand the problem here. What's the problem?
That she's not getting what she expected.
She's not getting what she expected, and perhaps her consent to get married was because she thought she was getting X, and it turned out that it was Y. It's a mekach ta'ut. Almanach ani ashir v'nimtza ani. Or, not that there's some confusion about the object, which is the device of the kiddushin, but about the husband. He says, marry me on the condition that I'm rich. It turns out he's poor. Ani v'nimtza ashir, or the opposite. He says, marry me because I'm poor. Why would she want to marry him because he's poor?
She wants humility.
Maybe she wants humility. Maybe, you know. They say that if you marry a rich person, it's not always such a bed of roses.
You earn the money.
I wouldn't know. As I've told you many times, my grandmother always said, you can fall in love with a rich girl just as fast as you can fall in love with a poor girl. Yeah, but I married for love, right? Eina mikudeshet. In any of these cases where there's a mix-up, she thinks it's wine and really it's honey, she thinks it's gold and really it's silver, she thinks he's rich and really he's poor, or she thinks he's poor and really he's rich, the marriage is not affected, right? It is an invalid kiddushin, and they are not, in fact, married because there was this essential, whether it's fraud or it's deceit or misrepresentation. But Rabbi Shimon Omer, im hit'a l'shvach mikudeshet. But if she got an upgrade, he said, marry me with this silver coin, and really it was a gold coin, which is worth more. So then, what? So Rabbi Shimon says, no, that counts, right? Because now she's getting more than she expected. It's not to her detriment. So what would be another case of that? Rabbi Shimon gives a klal. He gives a principle. He doesn't spell it out. The Tanakhama spells out examples from which you can infer the principle. But Rabbi Shimon gives a principle from which you'd have to then figure, so what would be an example of, she gets an upgrade, and therefore, even though it's not what she thought it was, it counts.
Presumably from poor to rich.
Presumably from poor to rich. Presumably, she thinks it's...
Silver to gold is a clear upgrade.
Silver to gold seems like a
poor
clear upgrade.
It's a matter of opinion.
Poor to rich, which is better?
It's also a matter of opinion, where silver to gold isn't really a matter of opinion. You're getting the silver value...
Yeah, that's what he said. Okay. Yeah.
And as he says, relative to today, he says, marry me with this $50 bill, and he hands her a $100 bill. Right?
Clear upgrade. Poor to rich isn't a clear upgrade because it's relative to today. Tomorrow the stock market goes, and therefore now you're rich and you're rich.
Yeah, but the stock market, yeah, well.
It's not clear because it's only relative to now.
Okay. Clear. Assuming the poor person owns stock. Yeah, the Chazal didn't know about the stock market. They knew about like futures, but they didn't know about stock. So the Gemara says, the Gemara, of course, you know, makes a lot of hay of this, as you can imagine. And the Gemara on two Amudim later, and a Daf later, on Mem Ted Amud Beis says, Al Manat Shani Tzadik, it gives other examples. Marry me on the condition that I am a tzadik, that I'm a righteous person, a holy, holy, righteous person. Afilu Rasha Gamur, even if he's a absolute wicked person, Mikudeshet, it counts.
I read this the other day.
You read this? Okay.
Because we might.
Why? It's on the sheet. Shema Hirher Betshuva Bedato. Maybe he had thoughts of repentance as he was putting the ring on her finger. And the opposite, Almanat Shani Rasha, marry me on the condition that I am wicked, Afilu Tzadik Gamur Mikudeshet. And even if really he's the holiest, righteous man of his generation, so the marriage counts. Shemehir Bedvar Avodat Kochavim Bedato. Maybe as he puts the ring on her finger, or so he's about to put the ring on his finger, he was thinking of Avodah Zarah. Meaning, you know that your thoughts, now what's the innovation of this Gemara?
Just a thought of tshuva is enough to classify you
as a tzaddik. And just thoughts of
avera.
Here specifically avodah zarah, but let's say generally heresy is enough to downgrade you from being a tzaddik. You understand these terms tzaddik and rasha, righteous and wicked, and righteous and wicked, right?
Well, part of it is the issue of the thought, just the thought. But the other issue is also that this whatever action would be would cancel out everything else you've done for the rest of your life. You know, it's only what you've done at that moment actually makes a difference. I mean, hypothetically, even if he wasn't just had a thought, maybe he would do an action, he could potentially switch, but it's somehow you'd imagine someone lived their whole life as a Rasha Gamor, and that one thought, with that one action would be enough. So apparently the existential where you are now is actually...
Well, in other words, except here, in this case, in other words, let's say somebody is, not in the context of Kiddushin, let's say somebody is a Rasha, and they have Hirhurei Tshuva. So in that moment, how do we judge him?
Right?
A person can acquire his whole world in a moment. But in other words, look, all of us, the Gemara likes to think in absolutes. In this Gemara, there are two categories. There's a tzaddik and there's a rasha.
What?
Later, in a moment, we'll see there's a third category called a beinoni, someone in the middle. But the Gemara likes to distill, for the purposes of determining halacha, kind of absolute typological characters. For the purposes of determining this, in other words, either the coin is silver or gold. Either the cup is wine or honey. Either the person is righteous or wicked. So we need to determine if this mistaken identity, occurs at the moment of kedushin. And if the Kiddushin was conditional, these are all conditional cases. Most of our Kiddushin is not conditional. When you married him, did you say, I'm prepared to marry you on the following conditions?
Nobody asked me anything.
You were so in love. He just had a birthday. The guy a break. Okay, cut. Take two. On the wedding day, amid spirit of love and joy. Right. But generally speaking, we don't get married on conditions. Usually those are recipes for bad marriages.
Yeah.
Right? Use those bad marriages. But the idea, like, you know, I'm going to get married to you on condition that you do this, that, or the other thing. Right? We try to influence our spouses, each husband and wife and husband, to grow and to be good people and et cetera. But we don't make it conditional. So the Gemara is thinking in a hypothetical. How do we evaluate the nature of this kiddushin if it was conditioned on X and X turned out not to be? Some conditions, nishkafelich, right? We say the marriage works anyway. And other conditions it voids the kiddushin. It means it was invalid. Right? We know, we're aware, we were discussing recently in recent weeks about invalid kiddushin. Right? Not every time a boy and a girl stand under a chuppah with a ring and a rabbi and he says, Harei Mekudeshetli, does it create marriage? What's an example?
Brother and sister.
Yeah, to a brother and sister standing under the chuppah. I mean, in the soap opera version, they were separated at birth. They didn't know they were brother and sister. Right? But that does not create kiddushin. Kiddushin cannot exist in that circumstance. Right? So not every act of kiddushin creates kiddushin. So your case is we have somebody who's generally a tzaddik, the righteous among the Jewish people, and I don't know, his mind wanders and he has a heretical thought. Right? So in that moment, but what happens? The next moment he goes back to, and vice versa. What, you don't think that there were I don't know, the worst of the worst? I just came back from Germany, so certain things in Jewish history are on my mind. I don't know. I wouldn't be prepared to say that there wasn't somebody standing there by the ovens in Auschwitz, worst of the worst, who didn't for a moment have hirurei tshuva. Think, you know, maybe just following orders isn't a good enough excuse. And then he went back to doing his work. Right? So he's in Russia, even though he had a moment of tshuva, but the tshuva turned out. That's not what we're talking about. I mean, maybe in heaven, two Nazis go to heaven, or two Nazis go to the Betin Shel, wherever they go to, whichever Betin they go to. And one never had a moment's pang of conscience, and the other did. Maybe in the Betin Shel Mala, they take that into account. I don't know. But you can imagine that they do. No doubt there were people that did horrible, horrible, horrible things that had some pangs of conscience, but not enough to stop them. I don't know how God keeps his books. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how do we evaluate a person in this particular moment. At the moment that Chatan puts the ring on the finger of Kala, is he a tzaddik or isn't he a tzaddik? Is he a Russia or isn't he a Russia?
And that'll determine if he.
And that determines if in that moment that he was Makadesh her. What's the problem, Ellen?
Since say he is certainly a tzaddik at the moment he claims to be one, or he's certainly a Russia at the moment he claims to be one. Says maybe.
Right. So maybe is enough to create what? A safik. And if you look at the Rambam, here in the third source. The Rambam expands all of these and brings other examples from the Gemara, which we didn't quote. Al manat shani talmid. I marry you on the condition that I'm a student. Now, that is something we can do. You want somebody who's, you know, who's going to get an education, right? Al manat, right? So then the Gemara has to determine what is the parameters of being able to say that you're a student. Does it mean you have a postdoc at Harvard? Or does it mean that, like, you... You try to, like, you know, listen to educational podcasts, right? Like, what?
It means you're attending remedial classes.
Right, so no, but as you know, this is the Talmudic mind at work, trying to figure out what would be the minimum basic. We know that somebody who says, Al Manat Shani Talmid, on the condition that I am a learner, I'm a student, right? So obviously somebody who's sitting in Kolel all day long, check. But what's the minimum to say that the condition is met? Right, almanat shani ashir, almanat shani chatam, right? So what, like, what's the parameter of chacham, right? Marry me on the condition that I'm smart, right? What's that? Forrest Gump's line? Mom always said, "Smart is as smart does," right? Stupid is stupid.
Stupid does.
I'm not shiny gibor, right? How strong do you? How much do you have to bench press, right? In order to, so you see where there's in square brackets the letter hey. Almanat shani tzadik. Afilu rasha gamur hare zu mikudeshet misafek. And you see the Shulchan Aruch underneath also adds this word, safek. Right? Because of Eliot's point. How do you know? So since there's a chance that maybe he had tshuva in that exact moment, so maybe we could say the moment they put the ring on the finger, he's a tzadik. So therefore, we're unsure. This is a doubtful kiddushin. Maybe they're married, maybe they aren't married. So what does it mean to be doubtfully married?
Yeah.
In other words, it's we apply the chumrot of both, right? We don't let them live together as man and wife because maybe they're not married. But if they want to split up, we have to treat them. Maybe they are married and they have to have a get. Maybe she's an Eishes Ish. Right, in which case, if she has relations with another man, there are very serious consequences, right? If she has children with another man before she gets a divorce from this, so there's certainly a case of safek mamzerut. It's a very situation. For our purposes here on the
she needed divorce if there's a safek if they're married.
Because it's a safek marriage. We don't know. This relationship between them, is it marriage or isn't it marriage? Right, so if she wants to get married to someone else, there's a safek that she's already married. So we have to resolve that safek. And the only way to resolve that safek would be a get that's given in order to resolve this doubtful condition. If they're not married, so the get that he gives her is meaningless. And she didn't need a get. But if they are married, it's the only way that she can be freed from the situation. Admittedly, it's a bizarre situation, but that's what the Gemara does. For our purposes here in the days before Rosh Hashanah, what lesson might we take from all of this?
Can I just go back to the second? This possibility that the woman married under circumstances in which she was essentially misled is used, if I'm not mistaken, sometimes. To absolve someone
who's
married later, the
possibility of. Oh, no. So it's bidyeved in a situation where there's maybe an aguna or something, and we have to find a way to say, well, they weren't really married. So we would marshal every leniency. And as a safek is both a safek, a doubtful situation creates both stringency as well as leniency, right? But absent that, just determining the case and the situation. But again, for our purposes on Erev Rosh Hashanah, trying to think about tshuva and hear hurei tshuva and who's a tzaddik and who's a rasha, etc. What can you extract from all of this? What does it mean to you as people that are facing down the judgment day of tshuva and repentance and righteousness?
Oh, because far he knows what's going on in a person's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Another person won't know, but I got a spark.
That's true.
It's almost as though.
What?
It's as though you can be as Russia as you like during the year. You come to Rosh Hashanah and you made Shuvah, and you really think you really do your Teshuvah, and you mean it at the time, and you can go back to doing your evil stuff afterwards.
I'm not sure that's the message, but the message certainly is that like on the Kiddushin, we need to determine what is the person's status at this particular moment, right? Even though he might in fact be a tzaddik, and if he says Hariat Mikudeshet Li Almanat Shani Tzaddik, and we know he's a tzaddik, and then after the Sheva Brochos, after the honeymoon, something goes wrong, and he leaves the righteous path and becomes a rasha. Do we cancel the marriage from that point on? No. Because at the moment of that they created the marriage, he was in fact a tzaddik. The right? If he says, Hariat Mikudeshet Li, you are married to me on the condition that what I'm giving you is a cup of wine. And it is a cup of wine. A very good cup of wine. Are they married? What happens if in a week from now it turns to vinegar? At that moment it was a cup of wine. We know wine doesn't last forever. You could say, by the way, there's something interesting. You could make a drusha about that line in the Mishnah. Wine and honey. Which is better? Which is more valuable? Well, in other words, wine is more valuable, but it doesn't last forever once it's uncasked. Honey lasts forever. Honey doesn't ever go bad. Right? So sometimes, you know, the sweet, simple thing is the enduring thing in a long marriage.
Ever goes bad?
What? Never. I think honey is natural preservatives. It doesn't ever go
bad. Water.
Well, if you have honey
that
went bad, it's
fake
honey.
Hmm. Anyway, that's just a drasha you could use at a Sheva Brachos sometime. Feel free to. Look at the Lechem Mishnah, the commentary on the Rambam. The Lechem Mishnah quotes our case, Almanat Shenit Tzadik, Afil Rasha Gamur Mikudeshet, Shema Hirub Tshuva Biliban. So, you know, you may have seen this. There's all types of things they do now at weddings they didn't do when we were kids. We're not all the same age, but we're, let's say, close enough that you go, we were at a wedding last night. And, you know, it's like they do that. Now, did any of you do this at your wedding where they sign the ketubah under the chuppah? It's become a popular thing. Like they read the ketubah. Yeah, so now it's become a more popular thing. Now they sign the ketubah, they read the ketubah, and then they pause, and there's like a little table set up there, and the witnesses sign the ketubah there under the chuppah. And the chatan here in Israel, there's this minag, the chatan also signs the chuppah. Is that something in Kutzla?
Because the chuppah ceremony is not long enough? They need to find ways to
add. I don't know. Yeah. No, and it might have something to do because usually when you sign, because you want to make sure that the ketubah is signed on the actual date, that the date of the signing and the date of the ceremony are the same. So very often, like last night, this might have been a case. You know, like the chuppah was like right after Tzeit HaKochavim. So when they had the chassan's tish, right, it was before. So now they make it universal that everybody signs it under the chuppah. Okay. But now there's also this thing in Israel that's become popular in the last couple of years, where you have one set of edim, one set of witnesses for everything. The Eidei Kedushin, the Eidei Ketubah, the Eidei Yichud. At your wedding?
Yeah, because I remember reading, there was somebody who said it was preferable, and so we...
Yeah, so that's, but that's become like the Rabbanut. When you go to register the Rabbanut, they tell you this is how you should do it. I guess you can argue. More than 10 years?
Well, I hope it's okay if we didn't do it that way.
I didn't do it that way. I don't know. So... So one of the things that you may see that the Masada Kedushin will tell the Edim, like before they put the ring on the finger and the Edim have to watch, the witnesses watch. Now that's, we talked about that earlier. Are they exclusive? That was your case. But they tells them, have a little tshuva. Do tshuva. Right? Have hirurei tshuva. Right? Repent of your sins. Right? The end is near.
Fasting on the day of...
No, these are the witnesses, because the witnesses are more important than the rabbi. The witnesses are more important than the... You don't even really need a Masada Kedushin. I mean, you do technically, but in reality you don't, or maybe in reality you need them, but technically you don't. But the Edim are the ones, the Edim witnessing the giving of the ring are the ones that create, that's what creates the Kedushin. So if the Edim are Ba'alei Averav, they're sinners, so they're invalid witnesses.
Hmm.
This is also like when you're needing to try to find a way out in a case of Aguna. So you want to say like, well, they were never really married to begin with, so she's off the hook. One of the mechanisms, to say the Edim were Posel, right? The Edim, they were in Shomer Shabbos, they were in Frum, they were related to each other, there was some other problem. So the Masada Kedushin will sometimes say the Edim are Heru B'tshuva. Have thoughts of tshuva, right? At this moment, because that way we'll make sure that, you know, if you're really secretly a Russia, if you did averas, that would invalidate your testimony. As
supposing the possibility years later that he want to find some kind of
pitta. Maybe he's confident this is marriage; it's going to last. So look at the Lechem Mishnah. The Lechem Mishnah says, "V'im tomar Hamakadesh b'psule edut. Amai eina mikudeshet. So if you get married with, you know, the Mishnah lists all types of characters that are posule edus, right? Because they're gamblers or they're highwaymen or they're involved in some other kind of avera, you know, professionally.
Lawyer.
I'll take a lawyer, a liar, right? So why? So we say that the marriage is a why. We should say that it's at least a suffek kiddushin, because maybe these professional gamblers, these card sharks, maybe at that moment they were under the chuppah. They weren't actually at the card table. They were under a chuppah. And maybe that hiruhu tshuva, so we should say, 1 second. Should I ask you a question after we finish the Lecha Mishnah? So we should say that it's a suffek kiddushin, because maybe they too had hiruhu avera nichush hiruhu b'tshuva b'liban. Maybe in their hearts they had tshuva at that moment. V'yesh lomar d'shani hocha t'kevan shu omer la al menat shani tzadik. No, but it's not a comparable case. In the case of the chatan, right, we say, he says, marry me. It's not a regular wedding. Even Rishoyim get married. Being a Rasha does not puzzle you from getting married. It puzzles you from being a witness at somebody else's marriage. Right? But here, what did he do? He made a condition. Right? If he had said, Hariat Mekudeshet Li, on the condition that I am above 6 feet tall. And really, he's 5'2". The condition wasn't met. He says, Hariat Mekudeshet Li, on the condition that I'm a tzaddik. And he's not a tzaddik. So you can't say, well, maybe he really was 6'2", because he stood on his tippy toes. No, he wasn't saying, objectively. But you can't say objectively under any circumstance, maybe he wasn't a tzaddik at that very moment, because all it would take is, hirhu rei tshuva. So when we say, al menat sheni tzaddik, amrinan shema hirher b'libo tshuva, kedei lekadesh, but that's not true about the Edim. The Edim have no reason to, we have no reason to presume. But when the husband says, Al Manat Shanit Sadiq, on the condition that I'm a tzaddik, what does that indicate?
That he may actually be married.
That he's thinking about being a tzaddik. V'od ha'cha omar b'faneinu al menat shanit tzadik v'kevan shehotziu b'faneinu cheshinan dil mehire b'libo. Since he said those words, since he's talking about being righteous, maybe that's an indicator that he had thoughts of tshuva. V'chein tir etzera, etc. But the Edim, yeah. So that's why some Masadri Kedushin tell the Edim, have tshuva. You know, that way we're in the clear, right? But what's the problem? How does tshuva work?
This is of no practical use, it seems, because there's nothing more complicated than human personality, and almost everybody is going to be part tzaddik and part rabbi every moment of his life.
Again, like I said, the Gemara deals in abstract cases. But there's no such thing, it's according to one approach, as part tzaddik, part Rasha. Skip to the Rambam.
Two-thirds of the way down there?
This the second Rambam at the bottom, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel in the Rambam. Bechol shana v'shana, shoklin avanot kol echad v'echad mi boye olam. Every year, a person's sins and merits are weighed. This is the, you know, the metaphor that we'll be thinking of. It might even be like the picture on your machzor of the scales of justice, right? Kids today, don't remember in science lab, right? You had like a scale. You had to measure like the in chemistry. You had to measure the things you had. It's and you had like those weights. And they told you you couldn't touch the weights with your fingers. Remember that? Because the oils on your fingers would affect the precision of the weights. Yeah, you had like these tweezers. You'd move like 3 grams or 1 ounce. Now kids don't know what this all means because it's all digital. It ruins the How do you imagine the scales of justice as a digital scale? It's no such thing because, you know, it's not being weighed against anything else.
Those two scales. And just look at the numbers. On the
other. So, but that the visual metaphor of the scales of the what?
I think you're running on a seesaw today.
A seesaw, yeah. But no, they get rid of the seesaws because of all the lawsuits. God forbid somebody should fall on their head. The whole world is weighed once a year. Im zchuyotav biyom tov shel Rosh Hashanah. Mi shenimtza tzadik nechtam lechayim. Mi shenimtza rasha nechtam lemita. V'habeinoni tolin oto ad yom kippurim. If you're a tzadik, you're signed for life. You're a rasha. The beinoni, the person in the middle, right? He's on hold from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur. That's why, you know, there are these very widespread minhagim that people do extra mitzvot during Aseret Yemei Tshuva. And they take on chumrot, even though they know that this is not a chumrah that they intend to keep the rest of the year, because you want to add on a little extra, right? There's a widespread custom, Pat Yisrael and Chalav Yisrael. These are things that we don't have so much here because, you know, all year long we eat Pat Yisrael and Chalav Yisrael. I mean, there's some important, things, but... trying to get us with those Reese's peanut butter cups.
But now they're importing milk. It's something to think about.
They are?
Polish milk.
Polish milk.
Who did that?
Yeah, but it might be full of Israel.
And then we
I didn't know.
It's a question of what that Japan is.
Yeah. Yeah, could be full of Israel from Poland. I didn't know there was like Tnuva is importing Polish milk.
No, Rami Levy.
Rami Levy.
Was
there
a shortage of milk?
I don't know. So how do you find it? So the Rambam here is playing off the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which is the source above. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Rav Kuspidai, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Shloshas Svarim Niftachin b'Rosh Hashanah. A different visual metaphor. There are three books that are opened on Rosh Hashanah. Echad Shel Rishayim Gemurim, the completely wicked. The Echad Shel Tzadikim Gemurim, the completely righteous. The Echad Shel HaBeinonim, and one of those in the middle. Now, of course, most of us are, David is correct. Most of us are Benonim, thank God.
Although Rav Rizkin tells a story about his son, who came to him when he was young and said that you, am I a Tzadik or Rasha? You're a Benonim. And apparently it was like traumatic to him because of all the Tzadfokus stuff. And he said he should have just said, you know, it ended up like he couldn't be in Shul in Rosh Hashanah. He didn't realize the impact. Very powerful speech about how little things we say to our kids without really thinking it through. And
Rabbi Rizkin must have said that because he was influenced by Lubavitcher Rebbe. And you know that the Sefer HaTanya, the foundational work of Chabad Hasidut, is called the Sefer HaBeinonim, because we are all Beinonim. We are all neither completely righteous nor completely wicked. And the human challenge is to figure out what you do with that identity. But the Gemara seems to be talking about what? So while the Gemara goes on, Tzadikim Gemurim Nechtavim Nechtamim La'alta L'chayim. The holy righteous are signed immediately for life. They are signed up immediately for death. If they merit, they're signed for life. Rashi says, what's the Beinoni? 50-50. The scales are an exactly. The weight of a feather. And that's the idea that not only are you judged, but your community is judged, and your whole nation is judged, and the whole world is judged. And you have to believe that the whole world comes out, it's a teku, it's a tie. Everything is 50-50. So that if I do one righteous deed, if I add the weight of a feather to the pan, it's going to pull me and my community and my nation and the whole world to the right side. Or God forbid I do one sin, I should feel that responsibility on my shoulders. But the Gemara's imagery is mathematical, right? So that a tzaddik gamur, and it's not just a tzaddik, it's a tzaddik gamur, A tzaddik gamur is one who is 51% righteous. And a rasha gamur is one who is 51% wicked. Now, how each thing gets weighed out, obviously not every sin is the same weight, and not every mitzvah is the same weight. And we don't ultimately know how God keeps his books, although we know that there's certain sins that have more severe punishments. That doesn't necessarily mean they carry more severe weight in the judgment. Intuitively, we know that there are certain things that are worse than others. And certain, what?
Let's say a person is basically a good person. Let's say he's 75% tzaddik and 25% Russian. He's 25% of the world. Okay? Does that mean he doesn't have to do tshuva and avera?
No, of course you have to do tshuva and every avera, because the goal is to get to 100%. Right? The righteous person, the righteous...
25
years, you're defined as a tzaddik. You're defined as a tzaddik, but even tzaddikim have to do tshuva. Right? Anybody who says you're 99.9% on that 0.1%, you have to do tshuva. Each and every avera, ben adam lechavero, ben adam lemakom, there's an obligation to do tshuva. That's how the Rambam opens Hilchot Tshuva. Right? If you're a Rashi, you have more work to do. And you know, for the judgment of this week, of these 10 days, you got to get past that, get over that hump. But even if you're at 51%, you don't say, "We're in the money. I'm in the clear." Yeah, you still have work to do, right? You still have work to do.
At least you're in the clear for this judgment, right? Though.
You're in the clear for like the which book you're going to be, but you still have an obligation to.
Because you don't know.
So. Say it, since you never know, you have to do it. So, the Gemara's calculation is a mathematical one. However, the math plays out, the Rambam in codifying this makes a significant change. He rejects the mathematical. He rejects the image of, well, if you know that you're 50, if you knew somehow through prophecy that, yeah, Taka, you are 50-50. You are the Beinoni. According to the Gemara, in reality, how many people are Beinonim? Probably not too many, because how often at random does it come out that your actions completely measure out one against the other? But you have to imagine that you're a Beinoni. But if objectively speaking, in heaven, they know whose names are in which book. So the Rambam rejects this mathematical formulation. Go back to the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? It's not about the math. It's about the tshuva. First of all, the Rambam doesn't use the language. The Rambam doesn't use the language of tzaddikim gmurim, absolute righteous, v'rasha'im gmurim, absolute wicked. Right? There's two categories. There's the righteous and there's the wicked. And then there's the beinonim. And it's not mathematical. It has to do with identity. Now, obviously, if you're completely wicked, if you're 85%, you know, wicked, right? So you can't say, yeah, but I self-identify as righteous. The Rambam doesn't say it's mechtzal mechtza. And if you add the feather's weight to the right pan, you get pulled over. The Rambam says im asa tshuva. Tshuva is about what team you want to be on. Do you want to be on the team of the righteous or on the team of the wicked? Now, you can be on the team of the righteous and still sometimes get it wrong. Even tzaddikim sometimes get it wrong, sometimes sin. And you can be a rasha and sometimes get it right. He was good to his mother. The famous book about the Jewish mafia, right? Right, Meyer Lansky. He was good to his mother. You know how hard it is to go your whole life without doing a mitzvah? Right? Yeah, Esav is a perfect example, right? You know how hard it is to go your whole life without doing any mitzvahs? I mean, we do mitzvahs all the time.
Esav didn't kill Yaakov.
Esav was good to his father, right? Right? Even, right? They say Hitler was good to his dog.
And his family doctor, who's Jewish.
Oh, yes? Okay.
Give a pass out of the
But that's not the issue. The issue isn't like, do you never do an Avera? I don't know about all of you.
But even for myself, I'm, you know, I'm sure you all think I'm a holy, righteous tzaddik. It's happened.
We know.
But it's happened. You can be a tzaddik and sometimes get it wrong, and you can be a Rasha and willy-nilly get it right. Willy-nilly, you know, do a mitzvah. Im asat tshuva means which direction are you facing? Right? It's not the pans of justice, it's a kind of continuum. And are you facing this direction or are you facing that direction? Are you?
Which direction are you moving?
And which direction are you moving? And which direction are you moving? Precisely.
It's an aside, but you know, we all know people in this world. We can't imagine how they spend their time doing a search for tshuva. What do they have to do tshuva? I mean, I suppose we don't know that, really. But
I mean, you know, self-awareness is a wonderful thing.
I mean, not speaking in particular, but certainly like the news of, you know, in the past 7-8 years, whatever, as many times we thought people were particularly righteous and turned out they weren't. So like, you know, the people, you know, it's not like...
Yeah, yeah. And the Rambam says it's not just about... you know, you ate something not kosher, you weren't careful about davening bezman, is a lashon hara, whatever. No, but it's also about midot. It's about like the way you think about things. It's about, you know, your character. So these things are all true. And of course, you know, the Rambam famously indicates that when we do tshuva each year, you also have to do tshuva al ha-tshuva. I mean, that's Rabbi Nachman's term. Rabbi Nachman's term is tshuva al ha-tshuva. But what the Rambam says is that when you do a vidui this year, you include all of the things that you previously did kapara for. 20 years ago, you did something really wrong. And in the meantime, you've done tshuva. 20 years ago, you stole money. For whatever reason, you stole money. In the meantime, you returned the money. You asked forgiveness from the person you stole from. He forgave you. You clapped al chet, you said vidui, you had Kabbalah al atid, you've never stolen again. It's been 20 years. You know what? This year you should do vidui, you should confess for that sin. Why? It's the Rambam brings it to halacha according to
about the caliph Sazelaki or whatever, like you're not supposed to bring up the sins you've already done.
No, in public. But in your private vidui, the Rambam and the Gemara and the Rambam says you should confess your past averot. Because it's a schut. What is vidui? Confession is not just the list of all the things you've done wrong. Confession is a self-diagnosis. When you confess something that you've overcome, hi, my name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 34 years. We've all seen enough movies with AA, right? What is that person saying? This is my, right? In AA, they give you like a medal for every like 10 years sober or something like that. Whatever it is, yeah, right? That's something to be proud of. But it's based on the fact that you once in your life really messed up, right? You once really...
You went to prison, you got forgiveness, you gave him back the money that you stole. That turns into a mitzvah.
That turns into a schut, right? That's the Gemara in Yuma. That if you do, no, because you're not because that's vidui isn't ripping your heart out. You go back to that because you say that sin, I fixed it, and if I fix that sin, I can fix this year's sins also. That's what vidui isn't confession in the sense of let me list the litany of my. Vidui is like milashon hoda'ah, right? It's a declaration. It's an acknowledgement.
That's it again. You're actually talking milashon hara about yourself.
But if you're speaking between you and God, it's not considered lashon hara. You don't say this in front of everybody, right? This is part of when you say the vidui, you're supposed to have an accurate assessment of your strengths and your weaknesses, of what you got right and where you failed. And if you know I got it wrong and I fixed it, I can fix these things also. Because if you don't believe that, you can't do tshuva. Because what's the final step in tshuva?
Not repeating.
But Kabbalah al-Atid. You have a sincere... If This happens to lots of people. How many people, particularly with addiction, is always such a good metaphor to use here. But, you know, we have addictions to things that aren't substances. But let's think of, right, how many people smoke and sincerely, sincerely, sincerely want to quit? They know it's killing them. They know it's making them sick. They know it's killing their loved ones around them, right? They sincerely want to quit, but you know what they know? They can't do it. A lot of people just can't do it. And no matter how sincere their desire to quit is, they don't have the Kabbalah al Ha'atid, the commitment for the future. So if you have a particular sin you're carrying around and you recognize the sin, right? Acknowledging of a problem is always the first step. You do vidui. You say al chet shechatati with X, Y, and Z. But you don't have resolve to change it. You can't do tshuva. It's not considered tshuva without Kabbalah al Ha'atid. So when you say that theft from 20 years ago, that is a zchut, because you're saying, I am capable of change. And vidui has to encompass the whole person. Tshuva has to encompass the whole person.
I've often found it strange that in the text of the vidui you say, there is no kabbalah. Like, you say what you did, and it's not like anything, right. And I won't do that again. And so you can go through the whole Yom Kippur, or... You know, when you vidui a million times, and you never actually might. Right. You might never done the Kabbalah Tid, in which case you actually.
Right. But because Kabbalah Tid is not, Kabbalah Tid is not part of vidui. Vidui is.
You imagine it. Okay. Right. Following vidui, you're going to have some Kabbalah Tid. There's nothing like that. So it's.
Enochina. There's an interesting question that was raised by the Rogachover, Yosef Rosen, who died, I think, in 1936. He said, wait a second. What? I think so. Do you have the Google machine? Did you print out the Wikipedia at home? You can look it up. Fact check me. Well, Reb Chaim died somewhat young, and I don't know. I think the Rogachover died in 1930s. Maybe I'm wrong.
You are not wrong.
I'm not wrong. Oh, Hashem. How old was he when he died?
He was born in 1858, so
78
years.
Oh, so he was more or less a contemporary, but he was longer lived. So Reb Chaim died in 1918. So Rogachev says, wait a second. This fellow says, Hariat Mekudeshli al Manat Shanit Sadik. But we know he's a Russia. But maybe he did tshuva at that second. So at the second, he puts the ring on the finger. What is he? Well, either he's a Russia, or he's a bal tshuva. But is a bal tshuva and a tzaddik the same thing? A bal tshuva is a wonderful thing. Many of us are bal tshuva. But is a bal tshuva the same as a tzaddik?
No.
Well, in the halacha, it seems that these are distinct categories.
Even greater.
Distinct categories, and they are not necessarily clear which is greater. So look at the Gemara in Brachos in the middle of the page. V'omer b'chia bar Abba, omer b'yochanan. Kol ha-nevi'in kulan lo nitnabu ela l'bali tshuva. All of the nevu'ot, all of the prophecies about how you should stop sinning and you should return to the good, and this is the reward that you'll get when you stop sinning, those were addressed to Balei Tshuva. Aval Tzadikim Gmurim, Ayin Lo Ra'ata Elokim Zulatech. Right? But they're not to the Tzadikim Gmurim, don't need those prophecies because they don't have to do Tshuva. Right? In other words, Tzadikim Gmurim are superior to Balei Tshuva. Right? Their reward is even greater. The promises to the Balei Tshuva that the Nevi'im promised, you know, which after all were most people, right? That was to incentivize them to do tshuva. But the Tzadikim Gemurim, their reward is like you can't even imagine. That's what this expression is, Ayin lo ra'ata Elokim zlotecha, right? You know, it's like, Mama, it's even better. Upligei de Rabbi Abahu, but there's a different position. Different position, perhaps more famous, the Omer Rabbi Abahu, Makom Shabali Tshuva Omdin, Tzadikim Gmurim Einem Omdin. That in a place where the Bali Tshuva stand, it's superior. Even the holy righteous, those who have never
sinned. Just to be
It's a different place.
It's a different place, but the, it seems that the clear implication is that even
they don't reach it.
Shenemar shalom shalom lerechok ule karov. That's the way it's widely interpreted. And the Rambam says, this is the last Rambam on the page from Perek Zion. Al yedime adam bal tshuva shehu miruchak mimala tzadikim. A bal tshuva shouldn't imagine that he is distant from the station of bal tshuva of tzadikim. Mipnei ha'avanot shvechatot shasu, because he has this record. Ein adaver kein ela ahuv v'nechmad hu lifnei haborei. He is beloved and desired by the Creator. Ki ilu lo chata meolam, as if he never sinned at all. V'lo od ela shescharo harbei, shahare ta'am ta'am chetu firesh mimenu v'kavash yitzro. But his reward is even greater, because he's tasted the forbidden fruits and put them aside. He was mitgaber, he overcame. Amru chachamim, makom shebalei tshuva omdim, ein tzadikim gmurim yicholim la'amod bo. The Rambam sharpens it. He says they can't even reach it. Klomar ma'alatan gedola mimalat elu. And then he says it explicitly. The Rambam reads the Gemara, not with all due respect. You and the Rambam disagree. Rambam says they are superior. Right? Shalochatu me'olam. Mipnei shehen kovshin yitzram yoter mihem. Ezehu gibor, says the Mishnah Navot. Hakovesh et yitzro. The Rabbi Soloveitchik has a famous essay called Catharsis. It's available on the website of Tradition, a journal of Orthodox Jewish thought, edited by Jeffrey Sachs. Catharsis is, you know, the purification, the process that one undergoes in purifying his personality. And it is exactly about this. Ezehu gibor, right? Right? The struggle, right? The struggle to become better, to improve oneself, is the very source of righteousness, of purity, of etc. So, but this is a machlokus, which is higher. So, how does our Gemara, the Gemara in Kiddushin, seem to Paskin? Like Rabbi Hia, who says that the tzaddikim are bigger than the Balei Tshuva, or like Rabbi Abau, who says that the Rabbi Abau. Because if in fact tzaddikim are greater than Balei Tshuva, so when he says Amanat Shani Tzaddik, Amanat Shani Tzaddik, at most he's a Bal Tshuva. He's a Safek Bal Tshuva, right? But he's not a Tzaddik. Because the Tzaddik here is, now the way we use Tzaddik is differently. It can be there are a lot of Balei Tshuva who are also Tzaddikim. I'm a Bal Tshuva, but I'm not a Tzaddik. And by the way that we use Bal Tshuva is not the way the Gemara is using Bal Tshuva. Many of us, I'm sure, are Balei Tshuva in the colloquial sense. People that grew up in non-religious environments, maybe didn't have Jewish education, Jewish day school, and along comes a Chabadnik with a pot of chulent, or a well-meaning rabbi, or a youth movement, or you know, whatever it was that influence, and we became Balei Tshuva. The Gemara didn't know about such people. In the Gemara's language, we would have been Tinok Shenishba, raised by wolves, right? Right, the Balei Tshuva of the Gemara, of Chazal, of the Rambam, of everybody up until the modern era, when there was this option for secularism, the Balei Tshuva, the classic Balei Tshuva, were people that were in the Jewish world, and the Jewish world was a religious world. It didn't mean that nobody ever sinned. People sinned all the time, but it was a world, a kind of immersion experience where to be a Jew meant to be in a world where you knew about Shabbos and you knew about Kashrus, you knew about Torah and you knew about mitzvahs. Now you either did them with joy or you did them, you know, with laziness, or you were sloppy about your commitments, but you knew what was demanded of you. So the Balei Tshuva of the Gemara and the Rambam were people like we all are today, from people that know what you're supposed to do and don't always get it right. And the tshuva that you have to do is to improve that. It's not the Balei Tshuva in the colloquial sense. So our Gemara is all based on the idea that Rabbi Chiya is not correct. That to be a Balei Tshuva is an upgrade. It's the gold when I promise you silver. Nobody ever complained
when they got more than they were expecting.
Only by
Yeah, right.
I didn't want to box it.
So, that's what these days are about. Right? That's what these days are about. We can be better than tzaddikim. We can be better than tzaddikim. We can be balei tshuva. And that's what creates, if not kiddushin, then kiddusha. And that's what we should all aim for in these days. We'll have shir next week, probably back to the regular shir in kiddushin during Setz Mitzvah. Okay, thanks to those that were online. Shana Tova to everyone.